We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 190. The Yankees are back in this series, just like I am back on the podcast. Scott, what's up?
Finally, we got some offense going. Had to go back to New York, which is obviously we knew that the offense would turn it back up, and they did in a big way. And not only did they turn it up, but Aaron Judge is back, baby. He's back. Big home run. Needed to see that from that man.
He looked good overall, and I thought it was so funny that he made that play down the right field line, slamming into the wall. Almost a do-over of the Houston play on that Correa home run. Obviously, different park, different scenario. But he just looked so much more comfortable at Yankee Stadium. He knew exactly where the wall was, how many steps he had until he crashed into the wall. Had no problem going up and nabbing it from some potential fans, some potential kid. I know that's what you were tweeting out from the Yankees, from the Bronx Pinstripes account, that Judge is too nice to take a ball away from a fan. But it was just funny how it was sort of like a do-over for him.
Did you see my tweet tonight after that catch?
No, I've been looking at too many tweets, dude. It said
no children were hurt on this catch.
No, just the guy in the tuxedo bowing to him.
The wall was pretty much the thing that took the brunt of it. I mean, the dude crashed into the wall. It was a great catch. He covered a lot of ground. That's what he does. I just think that the ball the other night, he just had a bad jump on it. And he didn't know the park. You're right. He knows the park.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the park.
And it's a lot shorter in right field.
That was a tough. People were saying that Judge should have made that play to harp back onto game two. I don't know. I know we're not going to really talk much about game two, but just let me throw my two cents in here because I wasn't on the podcast last episode. But that would have been an unbelievable catch for Judge to have made that play. First of all, it was a home run. Second of all, it's not his park. He's running towards the foul line. Reddick just had to run straight back on that Headley play to catch the ball. So it was a totally different scenario. It would have been a nice play. I think Judge thought he could have and should have made the play, but it was by no means a routine catch like some Yankee fans were making it seem on Twitter.
No, first of all, he was also towards center field. He was in right center. He wasn't all the way in just straight up right field. It was a lot of ground to catch. And Reddick's catch, one, by the way, he did not need to jump. He didn't. He could have caught the ball. He made it look better than it actually was. And Judge had a ton of room to cover. So just because he's a giant human being doesn't mean he can catch every single ball.
The thing is, though, when he was running, I thought he was going to catch it.
Oh, I did too. But then I see the replay and I see how much ground he covered and I realized that he just had a bad jump on it too. I mean, there were a bunch of things. Anyway, he caught this one. He caught this one and it was a beautiful catch and the dude had an all-around phenomenal game.
It was a lot of those little plays in Houston because both of the 2-1 losses, you don't make a couple of small plays and guess what? You're going to lose a game 2-1. Gladly, the Yankees didn't have to worry about that in game three. 8-1 because Dellin Betances shit the bed in the ninth inning.
Right.
But gladly, we didn't have to worry about those close plays come late in this game.
Well, no, that's the beauty about having a nice offensive outburst. When you have those giant runs, the run support, you have a little bit more room of to do the things that you can do and just to be more aggressive and play more loose. That was the one thing that I was really happy that they were coming back because it seems like whenever they're home, they just play a lot more loose. They play more their game. They do that dumb stuff off the field that just keeps them nice and fresh and acting like kids and just going out there and letting the talent take over. And today, that's exactly what it looked like. Finally, thank God, we got a hold of this Charlie Morton kid. He is exactly who we thought he is, just some guy. And we didn't treat him like the Dallas Keuchels and Justin Verlanders of the world. Because in the first inning, I was like, oh no, what's happening here? And then it didn't take long, but I wanted to see it in the first inning.
Well, it was weird because he was throwing 99 miles an hour. Everyone throws 99 miles an hour now, but Charlie Morton coming out throwing 99. Is a little startling. He was throwing 99. He was getting that two-seamer running back over to lefties, and he had a nice curveball going. And the Yankees had a couple of soft hits, right? The Didi bunt single, then he immediately gets picked off. Castro, the swinging bunt. Headley had the infield RBI single. You get Greg Bird with the bloop double down the left field line because Cameron
I'm not
Maben,
even calling that a bloop.
Cameron
yeah,
Maben
was just a
couldn't get the
lack
tampon,
of defense.
Couldn't get the tampon out of his ass to dive for the ball. It's the fucking playoffs, Cameron Maben. What are you doing?
I don't even know what he was doing. It wasn't even a dive. I think he could have been parked under that ball. I don't know what was happening.
If I were Houston, I would have benched him right then and there. How do you not go all out for that ball? He pulled up, not even didn't dive, just pulled up.
He was like 20 feet from the wall. I would have loved to know what was going through his mind. Yeah. I don't know if the wind was swirling or if it was something was messing with him or he didn't see the ball. I don't know. It was strange.
Right. But Todd Frazier gets the Yankees on the board out of nowhere, right? Because you see the swing. He's got his ass out to third base dugout. He's just taking a hack at the ball. And I'm like, oh, there's a weak fly ball to right field. And the ball just kept going. And it looked like the whole stadium was shocked that thing left the park.
I'm sure they were. I was shocked when I saw the swing. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, maybe it's got a chance to go over his head. Maybe he's playing in. I don't know. And that, like, what? It's bat? What? It's gone? It was just strange. Then you watch the replay again. He just flipped his wrists over and just was basically making contact. It was almost like he was fouling off the ball.
Right.
And it went out. It was pretty. I mean, I don't know if that's just forearm strength or just you found the right jet stream or what, but.
What did Verducci tell us? He had strong hands, right?
Oh,
some
did he? I don't
strongest,
know.
Some of the strongest hands in the
game. Man, I've been trying to tune out everything these guys have been saying. I can't handle Joe Buck and
they
John
were bad
Smoltz.
They're the two. Very bad tonight.
They're the two whitest dudes you could possibly put on the broadcast. They're the most corny, just horrible, horrible, cheesy shit they're saying.
What was with the accents? What was with the Howard Cosell/Jersey accent that Buck was trying to throw in tonight?
Yeah, then he did a couple other ones. When Headley was up, he did like a Headley Lamar trying to like do Blazing Saddles. And then he did back to back on that one. I don't know what his problem was. One, I don't think he's ever good, but today he was doing the impressions and it was a weird game.
Well, see, this is what this game became.
Kind of a weird game.
This is what this game became because the Yankees take an 8-0 lead fairly
early
in
the
game. It was a laugher. And then everyone on social media just immediately starts complaining about the broadcast. So it's no longer about the game. It's about that the broadcasters hate the Yankees. And they were giving Altuve a lot of praise. I think a little bit too much considering the fact that it was an 8-0 ball game for the Yankees. And Aaron Judge, the other MVP front runner, along with Altuve, was having an amazing game with two spectacular plays in the field. Not only the one at the wall, but the one diving coming in. And then the 3-run bomb. So...
Buck practically gave Altuve the MVP,
right.
Talking about it.
Right.
I mean, it's his MVP. That's basically what he said.
But, I mean, the bottom line is I really don't give a crap who Joe Buck or who John Smoltz roots for. All I care is that the Yankees were winning 8-0 at that point.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And that's why Twitter turned into a Joe Buck hate fest. and you know, it started to get funny. Because Joe Buck's an ass.
But it, like you said, it was just a weird game overall because there was some other weird stuff that happened tonight was that DD replay, right? I mean, that would have been a crucial moment in the game. The Yankees were just trying to get base runners at that point. And Altuve, that guy again, makes a nice play, throws to Gurriel, who stretches for it. The ump calls DD safe because he said the foot came off the bag. And then a replay overturns it, but I don't know what they saw that could have possibly have shown there was enough evidence to overturn that. So just yet another weird thing that happened tonight.
Yeah, that's 2 days for me. You know, I actually don't want to talk to you about this because of the replay situation and the fact that you're a scumbag Patriots fan and the unbelievable thing that happened yesterday in the Jets game. But the two replays, I mean, I don't even know what these guys are looking at. I mean, what are you looking at? They showed all the angles, and when you showed, like, it was hard to see some of them. But when you saw the one from the outfield, from the right field line down towards home plate, you could see that his foot was off the bag. You could see that there was separation. So I don't know how they could possibly have said that it wasn't what the call was on the field because the call was safe. So I don't know where you come up with clear evidence that it didn't come off when I'm looking at it and I see that there's a gap between his foot and the bag. They're saying the cleat, like, okay, you could see the cleat. No, you cannot see the cleat. And you could see the big thing for me was that when the foot was separated, you could actually see a motion back towards the bag. Like he was feeling for it. Like he was trying to push against the bag. You could see the foot go backwards towards the bag. That was the other clear piece of evidence that said, okay, he was not on the bag.
That's one of those plays that you just pretty much assume however the play was called on the field is how it's going to stand. And
yeah, don't get involved.
Right. I'm glad it didn't come back to bite him in the ass. And also thanks for, because we got a lot of new listeners during this postseason. So a lot of new listeners are going to know that I'm a Patriots fan. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you need to be outed. I'm sorry.
And guess how many Patriots games I've watched this year? About two, because I don't give a crap because the Yankees are in the ALCS right now.
That's a very good point. You shouldn't watch them. They're really not that good this year. So they almost lost to the Jets, and the Jets are freaking terrible.
CeCe, big man CeCe, 10-0, right? This is his 10th victory after Yankees lost this season. The stopper. He's been the stopper all season. The stopper in this postseason has come up once again.
Yeah, I mean, you can't – I don't know what – if there's a Yankee fan out there that wants anybody else on the mound in a big game at this point besides CeCe Sabathia, which is crazy. Like we'd be talking about this in the beginning of the season. The dude is on another level right now. And honestly, I got to tell you, I was talking about this with my wife just over for the playoffs, and then I think from the second half on, really. Like, CeCe Sabathia is becoming one of my favorite Yankees. Just the way that he has come back, and the way, I mean, even when he showed his the human side of him in 2015 when he walked away to get his life straight from with the alcohol rehab thing, came back in 2016. You could see that he was starting to, you know, figure out the Andy Pettit style pitching, and then this year really just kind of putting it all together. And then what he's done in the second half, and then late in the season, and then now in the playoffs, like, this is a man who is cementing his legacy as a New York Yankee in front of us, and just doing huge things. I really, really appreciate it. I think it's, I just think it's awesome. What we're watching is really, really good stuff, and we're gonna remember it for a long time.
As if we needed any more reason to love Sabathia, obviously he was the number one factor as far as the pitching goes as to why they won a championship in 2009, and he had a number of big postseason starts through 2012. But this playoff run, I think you're right, has solidified him as a New York Yankee, and now seeing him pitch anywhere else next year, I know that's a discussion for another time, but it would really suck to see him pitch somewhere else at this point next year.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I don't see it happening. But yeah, we'll get into that another time. But I really don't see it happening at all. I feel like there's too many like coy conversations happening about it too right now with everybody involved. I just feel like it's almost an unsaid deal that's going to happen.
And it makes so much.
They just need to find that money middle ground.
And it makes so much sense for both sides.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. But yeah, I mean, obviously we all know what he did in 2009. The man was a humongous part. I mean, like you said, the biggest pitching part of the 2009 championship. But for whatever reason, I don't know. A lot of those guys in the 2009, I was never like totally.
It was bought and paid for, dude. Yeah, it was bought and paid for.
Yeah, and after you come up, you know, growing up, and I was like, you know, in my late teens, early 20s for the 90s, you know, going into 2000 years, those were the years of the guys that, you know, were our guys. And Sabathia has always been there, and I've always liked him. But this year, for some reason, I don't know, there's just like, it's almost like he's become more of a person, I guess. And I feel like that's the side of him. Seeing, and honestly, even that podcast that he's doing with Ruco, like I enjoy listening to it and hearing just him as a dude talking, throwing F-bombs at left and right, just because that's the way he talks. He talks like a freaking sailor. He's just a likable dude, man. And what he's doing on the field just shows a lot of freaking nuts. And I love it.
The thing, though, is he's leaving a lot of it out on the field. So you also kind of wonder if he's saying, well, at this point, we're making a deep playoff run. I'm going to pitch every ounce of my abilities out of my arm right now in this postseason, and then I'm hanging it up. I'm not saying he's saying that, but that's almost what we're watching right now, that this is this guy going out on top.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I don't think he can possibly control that. That's why I love him. That's why I think I realized like the competitor in him.
Right,
I
always knew he was a maniac.
I always knew he was a competitor. But I think when this little affair I'm having with CeCe Sabathia of my little man crush, it started. I know exactly when it started. Actually, I can pinpoint it. I just realized when it started. It started in the was it last year when. Josh Donaldson got thrown inside. I mean, barely, and he was crying like a little bitch. Yep. And then there was that little mayhem with the Toronto Blue Jays up in Toronto.
Yep.
Was it in Toronto? I don't remember. And CeCe was coming out with that giant smile on his face. Like, that was one of my favorite pictures of last year. And I feel like he's built on that now with the other brawl, and he's just being more of a boisterous part of this team. And he's obviously, you know, a big leader in that squad. And I really love that. I love seeing different sides of him because I feel like we're seeing a different type of player.
Well, that's what this team, the one thing we've learned about this team coming down the stretch here and really after that brawl in Detroit is that they like each other. Todd Frazier, every time he has a chance, talks about how much this team is hanging out with one another, and that this is the best, most closely knit team he's ever been on, and all that kind of crap. Personally, I think he's laying it on a little bit thick. I think he's just trying to send some subtle hints at Steinbrenner so he can be brought back for the 2018 season. But regardless, I think there is something to that, where this is a very close team.
Nah, man, he's too Jersey to throw blow smoke in the moment. He's just talking. He's just talking and saying what he is. He just likes hanging out with the guys. He's just that type of dude. I just think he really enjoys. I think it's just a super loose clubhouse. I think these guys have a lot of fun, and I think it spreads throughout all of them. I feel like you're in that clubhouse, and you can't not have fun. I feel like everybody in there has fun.
Did you read Frazier's Players Tribune thing last week?
No. I saw it. I glanced over it. I didn't read the whole thing, though.
Yeah, there was one thing you talking about, how this was the only team he's ever been on where the veterans and the young kids, so sort of like the young kids act like veterans in a good way, and the veterans act like young kids in a good way, and they sort of have a nice mix that way.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it. That's what started happening at the end of last year. I mean, that's when the Yankees made that improbable run, and the kids started playing really well, and they were picking up the vets, because the vets are like, they just start playing looser. When you have guys who are on your team who are super young, are energetic, having a lot of fun playing baseball, it's contagious, and it stays in there, because young guys have energy, and they always have energy. And that's all you need for some veteran guys to sustain it as well. The one thing I thought was funny tonight is they were shoving it down our throats that Frazier was a Yankee fan growing up. I thought that was not the truth, and that he was a Mets fan growing up. Because he wasn't talking about it early, and he was like, changed. Oh, I don't want to talk about it. I think it has.
It's flip-flopped back and forth, because the whole number 21 thing, right? He wore number 21.
Paul O'Neill.
Yeah, because of Paul O'Neill. And he has, obviously, the picture with Derek Jeter from Little League. But you're right. I feel like there was some Mets history at some point. And all the way down in Tom's River, shit, he could have been a Phillies fan for all we know.
Yeah. There was just some unsaid thing. I remember when he came over, he was like, "Ah, well, I'll talk about that." Like he was coy about it, in the sense that I'm not going to say it because I'm pretty sure he was a Mets fan.
Keith Hernandez was his hero.
Yeah, exactly. Like those types of things. But man, now he's a Yankees fan growing up, so whatever. I don't really give a shit. But I just thought it was funny that Fox is shoving that storyline down your throat.
But getting back to CeCe and what he actually did on the field in Game 3. I thought he set a very nice blueprint for how to attack the Houston hitters. This is not an easy lineup for Sabathia. It's not an easy lineup for anyone, but they stacked the entire lineup with righties, right? Because they can not only have all those righties that we normally see, but then they can take McCann out and throw Gattis in. So there's a lot of right-handed hitters that Sabathia had to go through. He was pounding the cutter in. He was getting the slow slider on the outer half of the plate for the backdoor call. So I thought he set a nice blueprint. He used their aggressiveness against them. There was a couple key at-bats with runners on base early in that game going through the middle of that lineup. Remember when he got out of that bases-loaded jam with Altuve and Correa? He kind of just pitched around Altuve. He knew that Altuve likes to attack fastballs, didn't give him anything good to hit, and then he made Altuve pop up by making him swing at something off-speed. So, and I think it was like maybe even a cutter up and in is the pitch he actually got him out on. So that's what Sonny Gray is going to need to do in Game 4. Use the Houston Astros' aggressiveness against them.
The difference between the two of them is that CeCe all season long has been able to get out of jams that he's put himself into, because that's been part of his game plan. He's lived with the walks, because we know he can't throw, 90, 95 to 98 any longer, and he can't blow guys away with his fastball. So he's got to nibble corners. And all year long, he's been walking more guys. But that's fine, because that's part of his game plan. That's just part of it. You have to live with the walks if you're going to be attacking the corners like he's doing. And that's what's happening. So yes, you're right. He's not giving them the pitch that they're expecting. He's not giving them a pitch that's going to, a fastball down the gut if he needs to. He'll throw that off-speed breaking ball. But the difference between him and Sonny Gray is that Sonny Gray hasn't been able to get out of these mistakes on occasions. He's let these walks hurt him. So I'd like for Sonny Gray still... I agree. You have to. Look, you can't be throwing these guys fastballs. It's just...
They eat fastballs. I don't know how many
times we got to talk about this. The entire league is a fastball-hitting league. If you throw a guy in there who is more of a finesse guy, who can change it up, who can locate, and then sneak a fastball by you when you're not expecting it and counts that you're not looking for a fastball, that's when you can be successful. Sonny Gray has to do this, but Sonny Gray has to be around the plate. They're not gonna be swinging at the... The other difference with CeCe and Sonny is they know CeCe will throw some of these pitches for a strike. And if Sonny Gray's off, you know, they've seen what his past three, four starts are, and he's been off. So, you know, they may not be as aggressive knowing that those breaking balls very well will be out of the zone.
Well, I think there's a lot of hitters in that lineup that can't help but be aggressive, especially a guy like Gurriel. He's going to swing no matter what. So I actually kind of like this matchup for Sonny Gray. You're right. He hasn't been good. There has not been a lot to give us confidence, and he's been sitting for 12 days. That's how little confidence the Yankees have in him. They didn't start him for 12 days.
Maybe that's a good thing. I mean, it can't be worse than his last 3 to 4. Not that they were like completely abysmal, but you know, maybe some time off was doing him good.
October 5th was the last time he pitched. That seems like forever ago. So much has happened since October 5th.
Yeah, there's been a lot that's happened. It's been like 19 podcasts since October 5th.
So the last time we saw Sonny Gray, you're right. He was walking guys, falling behind hitters, and he had a bad start in game one of the ALDS. So I think if he uses his breaking balls to get ahead of the hitters, if he can do that, he will have success game four.
I mean, the other thing you're looking at is that this is game three, and you know, I keep forgetting about that one run that Dellin Betances jacked up in the end, ruined our little our goose egg. But I mean, that's 4 or 5 runs in the series. The Yankee pitchers have done a very good job keeping these guys down.
Oh my God! If you told us 5 runs through 3 games, the Yankees
it'd be 3-0.
Yeah,
no doubt. But you know, the guys that we're talking about, the two guys that have been identified as the heart and soul of their lineup with Altuve and Correa, those are the two guys that have killed us. And it's because they've had timely hits. I mean, Altuve's been on base a ton. But he's not like he's been doing like crazy damage. He's not getting extra base hits. He's getting a lot of singles. He's getting on base.
He's an annoying pest.
Yeah, he is an annoying little pest. And I'm telling you, we need Ronald Torres to go out there and just fight him. Just beat the shit out of him. Like, I want to see this.
But, I think Torres is getting his ass kicked. Altuve's got some thickness on him.
Nah, man. See, the difference between the two is Altuve will go straight up. Torres will bite. He'll bite, he'll pull hair, he'll kick you in the nuts. I mean, he's like a squirrel. He'll do anything he's got to do to win that fight. I got a lot of faith in that guy. But those two guys were kept at bay, and that's the key. I think you keep those two guys at bay, and you have a really good opportunity.
And for game four, Houston hasn't even announced a pitcher yet. We're recording after the game. Maybe they have announced one as you guys are listening to this. But
it's going to be Peacock.
It's going to be Peacock, yeah, or possibly McCullers, or is McCullers even McCullers and Liriano are both on the playoff roster, right?
I'm not sure about Liriano, but if he is, he hasn't been starting. I'm pretty sure he's been using the bullpen. From what I've been reading and seeing, it's going to be Peacock. But if anybody else, it's going to be McCullers because they used McHugh today. He was actually pretty good, so I'm glad they burned him.
I was going to say that next. I was surprised that they brought him in that situation. Just to save some bullets out of that bullpen, which, as we know, we didn't get to see that bullpen in games 1 and 2. Frickin' Verlander throwing a complete game against them. But that bullpen sucks. So you get into that middle relief of the bullpen, and the Yankees are going to win these games. Peacock's had a good season. He's inexperienced, though, so that's a plus for the Yankees when you're matching up with Sonny Gray. You don't think any part of them would be tempted to bring Keuchel back on short rest?
I don't think at this point. No, I mean, I think it would be way over aggressive. I don't think this team, to me, it would almost be like a panic move. It would be like a we have to win this game to stop the bleeding almost type thing, because if the Yankees get a roll, they could win another game. I don't see them doing it.
Maybe if they were down 2-1.
If they were down, I think I could see that more of a thing. But, this Peacock guy, like you said, has had a pretty good year. I don't know. We're not losing to a guy named Peacock. I'm sorry. It just can't happen. There's two guys. There's two pitchers on this team that I can accept the loss to, and we already lost to those two guys. So there's unless we face them again, and put up an L,
we better face them again, or else something very wrong happened in this series.
My point is, what I'm getting at is, I'm not losing to anybody named Morton or Peacock. Okay, not happening. This offense needs to tear it up against those kids.
So there was a lot of positives from the Yankees tonight, obviously, but a couple negatives just want to mention. Gary Sanchez still looks lost at the plate. Judge finally came around tonight. He had the walk in the first inning on that low borderline pitch that went his way, and then the Houston pitchers were forced to bring the ball up, and look what happens. He crushes a line drive that sneaks over the wall in left field for a 3-run bomb. But meanwhile, Gary Sanchez just cannot get anything going.
Yeah, no, he's still trying to figure things out. you know, if Judge can figure it out, hopefully Gary Sanchez can figure it out too. It's just these guys are they're so crucial to this lineup. But at the same time, you're seeing that the Yankees can score runs if one of these guys is doing well. I mean, there's other people in the lineup that can also and need to step up. Frankly, they need to step up. Guys like Frazier, who's been really good this postseason, actually, he is making more of a statement to say, hey, maybe I should be here. I mean, he's doing pretty damn well in the postseason. He's been one of our more dependable bats, actually, and then played also a good third base. But yeah, man, we need if we could get Gary Sanchez and Judge just. You know, maybe not torrid, but just kind of in there. You know, a little bit of both of them at the same time. This could be a tough team to beat.
Does Girardi shift the lineup around at all?
He's proven that he hasn't. He's proven that he's not going to do that. He's already talked about 100 times that the guys will figure it out. They're close. He's like they're always close. I always think they're close. That's what he says all the time. So no, I don't see him doing anything. If he shifts something, it's going to be very minor, and it'll be a righty lefty thing, probably.
Of course, I'm not asking to take Gary Sanchez out of the lineup or anything like that. And for everyone who's saying put Austin Romine behind the plate and Gary Sanchez at DH, can you please just shut up? Austin Romine is not starting a game at catcher for the Yankees in the ALCS. No. But maybe just put Bird in the cleanup spot because he's been seeing the ball and hitting the ball better. Just get as many good hitters back to back as you possibly can to try and string together some hits.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing they will do is mess around with 3-4-5. That's it. Or 2-3-2-3-4. Sorry. I think Bird is cemented in that five spot. And, I think they'll maybe flip with Didi and Sanchez just because of the righty lefty. I don't think he's doing much else. I mean, he's already pretty much said he's not going to do anything else. And anybody who's DHing is not going to mess with the top of the order. They're going to be down lower in the order. So I don't see it happening. I just don't. Joe is very committed to that lineup, I think.
Well, Headley actually got a hit today out of the DH spot. Was that the first one I saw since Raul Ibanez in the 2012 playoffs for a Yankees DH?
Oh, boy. Yeah, it was definitely the first one this year. If Ibanez was the last one, then yes.
Yeah. So since he got a hit, you can't take him out of the lineup.
No. Yeah.
Even though it was an infield
he got one
single.
Hit. Yeah, single. He got one hit.
I felt that. I mean, he did hit the ball hard in game two. Two twice.
Yes, he did.
Show for it.
No, that's right. You know, he did. He put together good at bats. So I thought it was the good move. I thought it was the right move to put him in there. Holiday looked completely lost in game one. So.
And Dellin Betances did almost ruin everything by forcing Chapman to warm up, and I was afraid Girardi was going to go to him. And that would have been, like I think Smoltz said on the broadcast, a minor win for the Astros if they had gotten gotten Chapman in the game. Gladly it didn't happen. But Dellin Betances just, you got to feel bad for him at this point, right? I mean, he was dejected walking off the mound.
So I took the ninth inning as an opportunity to try to get my son down early so that we could do this podcast. And I'm listening to the TV broadcast while I'm doing like changing him and getting him ready for bed. And I'm like, no, come on. I keep hearing like nothing good. And that's when I texted you. I was like, did they really just pull Betances? Because he was all over the place. So I didn't see his facial expressions yet. I will look in the morning. But this man is he's lost. He's gone.
Totally gone.
8-0 game at home, and you can't find this. You can't throw a strike. It's bad. Someone was tweeting at us saying he's got the Chuck Knoblauch syndrome, and it's probably not that far off.
Yeah. All right. So how are you feeling going to game four?
I feel good. I feel good. I don't feel good that I'm not going now that you have my tickets, but I'm happy for you.
Thanks for your tickets.
Yeah. Fuck, son of a bitch.
I was looking at where the tickets are. I'm going to be in prime home run catching territory. Hopefully, left-handed. Hopefully, I catch a bird bomb tomorrow night.
Let's just get something very clear. If Zach Hample catches a ball in front of you, you're getting just a complete Twitter beatdown from everybody because you need to be the guardian of the gate at that point.
And, I don't know.
And take him out.
He's.
I want to see a yellow blob fall over the fence.
He's been blocking everyone on Twitter, so including myself, I think. So I don't think he's going to be able to attack me on Twitter.
No. I'm not talking about Twitter. I'm talking about in real life.
I'm talking about in real life.
Him catching a ball in front of you. You need to block him out.
He's the type of guy that if you take a home run ball away from him, he's going to go tattle on you and say that you assaulted him, and you're going to get kicked out of the park.
Well, don't let him catch the ball. That's all I'm saying. Don't let him catch the ball.
All right, we got a big game four. Yankees are looking to tie up the series. Any last words, Scott, before we get out of here?
I'm ready. Just keep the offense going. We just the offense needs to just continue to mash because They got to win one game at a time, right? That's it. One game at a time. Tomorrow, Sonny Gray. Let's do it.
And if you're at the game tomorrow, tweet me at @Andrew_Rotondi. Let me know where you're going and come say hi. Have a couple beers. Talk to you guys later.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
How do you drop that motherfucking ball? He's out by fucking 10 feet. How do you fucking drop that ball? I gotta tell you, dude. Motherfuckers. They hold these guys to fucking 4 runs in 2 games. You gotta win one of those motherfucking games. You got to. I mean, I know they pitch fucking spectacularly, but so do we. Like, get your fucking head in the game. It's fucking playoffs. It's the fucking ALCS. What the fuck?
Yanks are up 8-0. CeCe's on fire. Guys are getting hits. Judge is on fire. Hitting balls, hitting walls. Guys are getting hits. It's a good night, guys. We're coming back.
What up, guys? Carlos. Did you read CeCe's lips off this last pitch he just threw? He was like, the fuck out of here, buddy. DC is a wild boy. Let's go Yankees, baby.
Game 3's over. Just listen to this game. We're so happy. Bats came alive. Guys are doing good. We have one problem. And that guy's sitting in the booth. Joe Buck. You know, the Yankees are up 8-1. And he's still talking about how, you know, even if the Yankees bring out Chapman, somehow the Astros are winning in this game. You know what? With this young team, there's nothing I would love more than to just see Joe Buck for the next decade just have to call Yankees playoff games over and over and over again and just have to endure it, just listening to him suffering. And tonight, it sounded like he had a gun to his head every time anything good happened with the Yanks. But anyway, a great win. We win again tomorrow, and we win again the next day. Win the series, we win the World Series too. Go Yanks.
Morning, boys. Danny from England. What a game, what a game. What are the voice on the crew in the bleachers, the boys in the stands. Fantastic stuff. You New Yorkers know how to make a row. Aaron Judge, what a club, what a bat. Todd Frazier, the Todd father. Superb. CeCe, rolling back the years, a legend. Can't wait for game 4. The Yankees are coming. Let's go, Yankees.
Greg from New York here, guys. Yankees win game 5 in Cleveland. See, this is what happens when, quote, the best team in baseball doesn't take the Yankees seriously. You're going to give a team like this momentum, and now we got a head of steam going into Houston. I mean, that's not the steam now. I wasn't really sure about the trade for Todd Frazier, but I think he proved himself, and it wasn't for him in that ninth inning. I don't know if we would be here right now. And by the way, fuck Francisco Lindor, man. First of all, he grounded into that double play in the fifth inning that changed the entire game. And on top of that, for a whole series, especially in game 2, he's getting out, third out in innings, and he's pounding his fucking glove like an asshole. You know, like he fucking just got the third out from game 7 in a World Series. You know, just control yourself, pal. Control yourself. You know, grab your glove, bring it down to your little man cave in Cleveland, and you can pound the fucking glove while you watch the Yankees win number 28. Go Yanks.
What is up, guys? It is WFAN legendary caller Mike in New Haven. You know, have a good shot against the Astros. They're playing without money. They're playing loose. They're having fun. And it's truly a great thing to see. I think they got a decent shot to push the series all the way to 7. And I think they can win the whole freaking thing. So, man, I this is the first team I can truly relate to. Obviously, you know, I love Jeter. I love Mariano, Pettit, Masada, and whatnot. But as a 17-year-old kid, this is the first team that I can truly say is my team.
Aaron Judge finally decided to get a hit, and Greg Bird runs slower than I've ever seen someone run in my life.
Is Greg Bird honestly that slow? Oh my, down 2-0. Fuck you, Ellsbury. You're fucking useless. You're fucking terrible. Terrible. I'm gonna need the Yankees to stop losing close games, because it's really taking years off my life.
Joe Buck's gotta be the worst announcer we could possibly have on right now. We're tied 1-1, bottom of the seventh, one out. The way this guy's talking, it sounds like we're down by 5 runs. Get him the hell off the air. Why do they let him keep doing this?
Gary Sanchez, you are a catcher. Catch the ball.
Here we go again. Sanchez. Dude. Okay, he didn't let me pass balls all the time. But get down. Halfway up the third base line. Are you freaking kidding me? That was the game winner. Hello.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.